On Wednesday, October 7th, the Bozeman Candidate Forum Series, which is a coalition of the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, League of Women Voters of the Bozeman Area, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library, presented a forum for candidates for Montana Senate District 31, House District 65, and House District 67. The event was held as a video teleconference, and we recorded the audio during the event.
All right. Welcome, everyone. And thank you for signing on for tonight's virtual webinar and candidate forum. My name is Melissa Heron, and I'll be moderating this evening's event. I am the nominations chair with Bozeman Business and Professional Women. We are a nonprofit here to empower women locally. Tonight's forum is sponsored by Bozeman Business and Professional Women, along with the League of Women Voters Bozeman and the Bozeman Public Library, as well as the Belgrade Community Library and American Association of University Women. This virtual nonpartisan candidate forum series will be hosted on 3 evenings, including tonight. There was one last night as well. So we have one tonight. Then there is also one on October 12th and one on October 13th. And each evening features a different set of candidates or ballot issues. The forum will run for the same time each evening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And the public can sign on to view each evening using the same link that you used to get on tonight. So again, the public link is the same for each evening. Each evening's forum will feature different candidates, as I mentioned, and the evening's forums will be recorded. You can find the whole forum schedule on the BPW Facebook page or the BPW website, and we will post the recordings there so that you can watch them if you miss them, or you can share them with friends if they were not able to watch it. It can also be found, the video recordings can also be found on the YouTube channel for the Belgrade Community Library. If you're not sure which district you're in as a public citizen, you can visit app.mt.gov/voterinfo after tonight's forum is finished and check out what district you're in so you can see which representative is representing you or is running to represent you. If you aren't registered to vote, you can do so by visiting the Secretary of State website, sosmt.gov/elections. Voter registration closes on October 26th. Ballots can be completed and turned in via mail, snail mail, or in person at a polling location, or in person to the county courthouse on election day, which is November 3rd. On election day, November 3rd, same day voter registration and in-person voting will be available from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. in the evening. And now, audience, for the rules for how to submit your questions. First of all, the rules about the questions are that questions must be questions and not statements. You may direct your question towards a specific candidate if you like, or to the entire group. For each question, regardless of who the question was initially directed toward, all of the panelists will have an opportunity to speak if they would like to. Note that I, as a moderator, will be reading your question out loud as they come in, and I will direct them toward the candidates and give some direction and instruction as to who should answer first so that everything is orderly and organized. I'll also be incorporating questions that were submitted via email prior to the live event because there were two options for questions to be submitted by the public. So we do have some that came in via email. Those will be mixed in with the ones that come in live with the Q&A. Once a question has been answered by all of the candidates, then it will show up in the answered questions tab. So you should be able to see that that has been answered and we will move on to the next question. Please do not duplicate questions if you can. Try to keep up with what's happening. We will probably have to cut out a question if it is exactly duplicated or if we've already addressed that topic. So try to be diverse in your questions. The agenda for tonight's forum, just so you know the order of things. First, we'll do candidate introductions. Then we'll have opening statements from each candidate, followed by prepared questions from each candidate. Then we'll have the Q&A from the audience, and then finally closing statements. I'll wrap up the forum at 8:30 p.m. to end the webinar. And here is a reminder of the rules for the candidates. Candidates are asked to directly address voters in a fair, nonpartisan setting and to show us who you are by presenting perspectives from your own stance, but not make comments on, criticize, attack, or question your opponent. I will stop or mute any candidate who makes comments out of order or who disregards the forum format and rules. The timer, which is Sarah, will let each candidate know when you have your half a minute remaining to speak with her yellow sign. And then when your time is up, she will hold up the stop sign. The audience guidelines are to submit your typed Q&A questions without comments again. So just a question. And if a member in the audience asks a question that is yes or no, the candidate is welcome to say yes or no, but then you may also elaborate on your yes or no answer. All right, so now let's welcome the candidates and get started with some introductions. I'll do a little brief introduction and then we will go into the longer introduction portion. So when I say your name, candidate, please just give a wave so that the audience knows who is who. First, we have the candidates running for Senate District 31. We have Christopher Pope for the Democratic Party. Hello. And we have Nick Olivato for the Republican Party. Thank you, Nick. Next, we have candidates for running for House District 65. We have Jolene Crum for the Republican Party. Hello. And Kelly Cordham for the Democratic Party. And finally, we have candidates running for State House District 67. We have Colette Campbell for the Democratic Party, and Jedediah Hinkle for the Republican Party. Thank you. And we had also expected Andrew Schaefer, who was invited and had responded. He is with the Libertarian Party. He has not signed in, so we are hoping that he'll be able to sign in, and if he does, we will incorporate him into our agenda where we are. Additionally, I'd like to announce that those candidates who are not here this evening, and those of you who are here, as well as anyone watching who may have participated last night or who will be participating coming up in the forum videos, we encourage you to fill out the questions for a platform that is called Vote 411. It is a website that was established by the League of Women Voters. It collects and distributes information on candidates. Each of the candidates here and participating in all of the other forums and everyone who was invited to participate has received an email with a link to fill out that form for that voter pamphlet. And then you should have received another email today, a second email with a link. So we encourage you to fill that out, and we encourage voters to visit the Vote 411 website at www.vote411.org to learn more about the candidates. We also hope that all the candidates have submitted their information to the voter guide that will be in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle on Sunday, October 11th. So thanks again to all of the candidates who are here with us tonight. I'd like to invite you to begin with your 2-minute opening statements. To make it easy, I would like to just give directions on who is to go first. And then we will start the timer and you will have 2 minutes to introduce yourself. So I will go around the screen and we will start first with Jedediah Hinkle.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. So I'm Jedediah Hinkle. I was actually grew up in Phillipsburg, Montana, a small ranching logging town. And in 1998, I moved to the Bozeman area and attended Montana State University. majoring in fish and wildlife management. I did get my degree, and I worked close to 20 years doing fisheries conservation all over the Gallatin Custer National Forest. I've actually worked on other forests also. Simultaneously, I worked in the area of profession of taxidermy, which currently right now I have my own business in the Belgrade area. I am married and have a 6-month-old daughter who was born right smack dab in the height of the pandemic, right in April there. So that was interesting, but we're enjoying her immensely. And then in 2014 is when I ran for a Senate seat, a swing seat in Gallatin County. It took in Four Corners, went down to West Yellowstone and all the way into the college. I served 4 years in that Senate seat. I did win that election. And then while in the legislature, I was quickly basically selected for leadership positions. I served as the vice chair of the Fish and Game Committee. And then also I was approached to start the Montana Legislative Sportsman's Caucus. So I currently live in Belgrade, and it's my neighbors in this community that I would like to serve. The logical choice for me to run if I wanted to run for the House would be in my former Senate district, one of the House seats within that district, but I chose not to run there. I chose to run in Belgrade because I do want to represent my neighbors and the area that I live. Thank you.
Thank you, Jedediah. And so next we'll have an introduction from Colette Campbell, also with House District 67.
Thank you, Melissa, and thank you everybody tuning in tonight. My name is Colette Campbell, the Democratic candidate for House District 67. I graduated high school in this district, and I delivered pizzas for the Ricochet Pizza Parlor as a brand new mother. Discovering the Head Start program was one of the best things that ever happened to me. I volunteered, I substituted, I worked on the policy council, and I went to night school. I earned my early childhood development degree and spent 12 years giving back with some of the most amazing people still in the community today. We nurtured families' parenting skills. We connected hundreds of adults to learning programs, mental health counseling, and all kinds of resources that improve lives. I was a working mom. I was a football mom, a horse show mom, a Boy Scout mom, and a camping, hunting, and fishing mom. Both of my children finished K through 12 right here. I went back to school and earned my degree in media and theater arts and a minor in small business and entrepreneurship. Coming up on my 12th year as staff at MSU, I work with our youth on the other end of the age spectrum. I keep a steady flow of film and video equipment coming and going between classes, faculty, and students. We produce world-renowned filmmakers working around the world with organizations like NASA, Smithsonian, and the National Geographic. And in that time, I've become active on behalf of all working Montanans, public or private. I'm an elected board representative president of my elected board representative with MFPE and a director at large with Montana AFL-CIO. I'm running for this office because big corporations are raking in profits hand over fist, often at the demise of working people and small businesses. Most Montanans agree. Wall Street and the stock market do not reflect the economy of Main Street Montana, and we can do better.
Thank you. Okay, so moving through our House districts next, and we have an introduction, please, from Kelly Cordham, running for House District 65.
Thank you, Melissa. Hi, I'm Kelly Cordham. I'm running for House District 65 here in North and West Bozeman. I'm a lifelong Montanan. I grew up in rural conservative Ekalaka, Montana, in the eastern part of the state. I was out here in 1999 for an ag mechanics competition, and I fell in love with Bozeman, and I knew it's where I belonged. And then I had to go through 4 more years of high school before I could move here. In 2003, I moved here for college and got a degree in computer science. Over that time, I've worked a lot of different jobs in this area and around the state, including cutting hay, fighting fire, pouring concrete, installing sprinklers, and fixing computers. Finally, in 2010, I got a job with the Community Food Co-op. I'm here in town, and I've been the systems administrator there since. I've seen a lot of Montana through these various jobs, and I would like to use that experience with the broad array of people to form good solutions in the legislature. For the second half of my time, I'd like to raise awareness of a candidate who couldn't be here tonight. Emily Brosten's running in House District 68, south of the interstate in Belgrade. It's the same size district. It's also very diverse with its families and farmers and hardworking folks. Emily grew up in the Flathead Valley and is raised by a family of farmers and entrepreneurs. She graduated in MSU here in 2017 and has been working for a local ad agency since then. She has had the opportunity, like me, to work with a broad array of Montanans, and I believe, much like me, that skill set will aid her in the legislature to form solutions across the aisle, as they say. She is humbled to serve in this opportunity and is excited to empower individuals to educate themselves and advocate for the policy changes they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. Okay, and next we have Jolene Krum, also running for House District 65.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Jolene Krum. I'm a fifth generation Montanan. I grew up in Phillips County and came to Bozeman to get a degree in biotechnology. I've worked in immunology, in an immunology lab, parasitology lab, and I interviewed at the NIH to work with biosafety level 3 pathogens. I then came to work at Ligacyte Pharmaceutical here in Bozeman and left the lab when my firstborn was a year and a half old. I now have 5 children. The oldest is 15, the youngest is 5. I started a small business after actually starting a business brokerage in the Bozeman area to help business owners sell their business when they were ready to sell. And I really felt like we were headed to a recession in the fall of last year. Of course, I knew nothing about what was coming, but I was able to actually start a small business where I'm working to make a biopesticide to control grasshoppers on organic farms. And I'm just looking forward to representing the folks of Gallatin County. I'm running on a pro-medical, pro-life, pro-gun, pro-business, pro-constitutional freedom platform. I hope folks will actually visit my website, because my website really isn't about me. It's about linking you to information, whether that is freedom of speech, freedom of religion, all these things that we hold very dear and are very important. And I'm very concerned about the government's overreach in our schools and business and using this pandemic as an excuse to destroy our lives and our economy.
Thank you very much, Jolene. Okay, then moving on again in the bottom of your screen, we're going to go next to Chris Pope, running for Senate District 31. Oh, and Chris, you'll need to unmute yourself, and then we'll start.
Thank you, Melissa. I apologize. Rookie mistake on Zoom. I want to thank the legal Women Voters and BPW and the library and other hosts for putting this evening together. Thanks for colleagues for being here, and thanks for those watching. My name is Chris Pope. I'm running for Senate District 31 on the east side of Bozeman, running north and south from Sites and Bridger Canyons to the north, all the way down to Highlight and Cottonwood Canyons. So it's a big territory, 20,000 folks. I'm the long-term Bozeman resident. My wife, Maddie, and I have raised 2 kids. I have a business degree. And with my wife, we together built a family-owned retail store on Main Street, which we ran for 15 years. I've helped build and renovate downtown. I've served on some terrific local nonprofit boards. I've served proudly on the Human Rights Commission. I'm a 2-term legislator, and I'm running because I care deeply. You'll hear tonight that my campaign has some broad themes about diversity and inclusion, affordable health care for everyone, economic opportunity, issues around Bozeman's livability, property tax relief, and affordable housing being principal to those, and treating folks with respect and decency. I'm running because good government matters. State government provides essential protections of our liberties, our quality of life, and the formation of economic opportunity. So if elected, I'll advocate for Bozeman and the entire community, all constituents. Madam Moderator, I want to end by reiterating my thanks this evening for hosting this event. The League plays an important role in informing voters, and I appreciate that. And with your permission, Madam Moderator, I'm going to second candidate Cordham's comments on a colleague, Emily Brosten, who should be here tonight. Am I out of time? I wasn't given the 30 seconds. Yeah. I apologize. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. And then finally, we'll end in the middle of the screen with Nick Olivato, who is running for Senate District 31.
Hi, everyone, the League, and fellow Montanans. My name is Nicholas Olivato, and I'm running for Senate District 31. I got into this race because Montana needs fresh, strong, and young leadership in the capital that actually represents Bozeman's progressive traditions. I'm the son of an immigrant. My father came to this country looking for work and looking to raise a family in a safe and equitable society with affordable health care for all and quality education for all. I will fight for both of those things in the legislature. I got into this race because I'm a true outdoorsman. I've rock climbed, backpacked, and snowboarded all across the country and here in Montana at Homestake and down at the Madison River, Paradise Valley, and Bridger. I love Montana's great outdoors. As a lifetime athlete, I take care of my body and love staying in shape, and I will take care of Montana in the same way, helping build a clean, modern energy infrastructure that keeps Montana running while keeping Montana green. I got into this race because I'm an avid outdoorsman, fishing, camping with my family, and will wholeheartedly fight to protect and build access to those expansive public lands. My fiance is a person of color. She's half Mexican, half Vietnamese, and we both know what it's like to be a person of color in Bozeman. We can uniquely understand the challenges minorities face here in Bozeman, and we can both be their voice in the capital and their inspiration back here in town. Bozeman needs someone fighting for them that actually represents their lives, and lives and breathes the message of progress that they're fighting for, not for someone who just copy-pastes the message. Bozeman needs someone who's a strong, smart, and engaged representative, not a generic copy-paste candidate. My technology background uniquely positions me to engage my constituents in real-time, year-round, not just during the election year. We need real, unique, and diverse representation in the legislature, not someone who only knows how to forward the message. I got into this race because I am not only the message, I'm also the messenger. I represent the future of this country and the future of the state, and I won't sit down while the political establishment of yesterday continues their final grasp for power. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, thank you everyone for introducing yourselves. Next, we have an opportunity for each candidate to present a 2-minute answer to a prepared question that they were sent in advance of tonight's forum, and so that the audience knows what that question is. The question reads, what current issue do you think is the most pressing matter for the Montana legislature to take on? And what specifically would you propose to address the issue? And we will start. Let's start with Kelly Cordham with House District 65.
Thank you. I think it's going to be a theme tonight, but I think the most pressing issue right now is the COVID crisis. We hit a daily record today for cases, over 700, an increase of 200-ish. Very alarming. That sort of trend cannot continue and have business go on as usual. We certainly need to get control of the virus by the easiest methods possible, like wearing a mask. Is the bottom line easiest, cheapest method of suppressing a ton of future economic damage. That's number one. I think it's important for our leaders to express good public health knowledge and lead by example. Related to that will be the economy and therefore the state budget and how it's affected by COVID, not only in the direct costs of COVID, but and the economic costs of lower tax base later. What really worries me is we're gonna have lower state income, and services will be threatened. So I guess a big portion of my interest in running is making sure we prioritize the things that make Montana strong in that budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And next, I'd like to hear from Jolene Crum, also running for House District 65.
Yes, thank you. I think the biggest threat we have right now is not this virus, but the threat of losing our freedoms. This virus has not been isolated, so I will constantly ask the question, what is the positive control on these tests? If you've read Dr. Mikovits's book, Plague of Corruption, that gives you a little bit of insight into how deep and dark I think this thing is being manufactured. It's no coincidence that Fauci is kind of directing our country, and yet he is going to make millions of dollars with the Moderna company, so which is also funded by Bill Gates. So we need to get a bigger picture of what's really going on here and the potential loss of all of our freedoms. So how does that affect us in the legislature? Well, I would be very motivated to dismantle the power structure of our Gallatin County Health Board. They should not be mandating masks. They should not be mandating vaccines. They should not be telling business owners how to run their business, because that puts the business owners in a really terrible position. They're making the business owners police their businesses. Who wants to do that as a business owner? They want people to come in the store and they want people to buy their products. And who wants to sit outside the front and do a check? Oh, you're not wearing your mask right. You need to have a mask on. Nobody wants to be dealing with this. For people that are vulnerable, they need to be protected. My mom is in a vulnerable category. We have to take precautions with her. But for a virus that has a 99% survival rate, this is totally ridiculous. And we need to make sure that the Gallatin County Health Board does not have any power over our businesses or our schools.
Thank you, Jolene. All right, so moving again through our House districts, can we please hear next from Colette Campbell with House District 67?
So in 2003, the Montana legislature decided Montana was not wealth and business friendly enough and approved a significant tax cut for the top 1% in our state. That's a deficit every day Montanans still carry the load for. The pandemic has shined a spotlight and exposed the damage this tax holiday has done to our investment in Montana infrastructure, public education, agriculture, small business, public health. These cracks will continue to deepen even if COVID is gone tomorrow. Unemployment offices with ancient computer systems couldn't handle the high number of necessary claims when working people needed help most. Montana is dead last when it comes to internet accessibility across the country and completely missing in action in our most rural communities. Montana needs a can-do legislature, not beholden to the monopoly on meat production houses that puts the entire nation's food supply at risk, not beholden to out-of-state land developers and multinational corporations. Hardworking people right here in this valley do not have access to affordable housing, childcare, or healthcare. My father was a small businessman, and it was a matter of principle to take care of his employees. If the business did well, so did the workers. It would have been an outright embarrassment for him to make 278 times his lowest wage employees if they couldn't put a roof over their heads and feed and clothe their children. That principle has all but disappeared in big business practice today. Today, it's all about getting shareholders and investors better returns, leaving the people keeping the business running and profitable out in the cold. Montana can do better by its working and middle class, and we start by ending the wealth tax holiday enjoyed since 2005. At least 10 other states are drafting legislature to do the same.
Thank you, Colette. And Jedediah Hinkle, running for House District 67. Can we hear from you?
Yeah, can you guys hear me? Can you hear me all right? Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we got you.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, what I believe is the most pressing issue in Montana needs to address in the legislature has historically been one of the number one issues brought up to me while I'm meeting the residents of my district. However, this issue has been multiplied in its urgency more this year in 2020 than in past years due to some unplanned side effects of the coronavirus. This is the issue of skyrocketing property taxes. I'm sure many of you are aware that due to the coronavirus, many folks are engaging in a mass exodus from other states in the U.S., and apparently they believe Montana is virus-free. They are moving to Montana in droves. Realtors are reporting that houses for sale are sold in 3 days. Buyers are purchasing homes in the Gallatin Valley for cash in sight unseen. This fast increase in home buyers has in turn driven home prices up immensely. Bozeman recently reported an increase in home values by nearly $90,000 in 1 month. This means property taxes are going to follow suit and add to an already high rate of increase. With higher property taxes comes even higher rental prices. When the tax increases, so does rent. In my Belgrade district, I've already met residents that are moving in with extended family members just to afford the high cost of rent. So what can I do about this if elected? My goal is to pass a change to the property tax structure that would lock property owners into the property value at the time of purchase for as long as they own the property, and for existing homeowners to roll them back one tax assessment period and lock them in. This will protect them from having to pay excessive taxes on skyrocketing home values while still allowing property taxes to increase at a slower rate only if a bond or levy is passed. With the bond or levy, the residents have a choice, but the homeowner generally does not have a say in their home value dramatically increasing due to factors out of their control, and that's what I'm looking to address in the Montana legislature.
Thank you, Jedediah. And so before we move on to the Senate candidates, I wanted to refresh the minds of the public that this is the question we're answering. It reads, what current issue do you think is the most pressing matter for the Montana legislature to take on? And what specifically would you propose to address the issue? So can we please hear from Nick Olivato, running for Senate District 31?
Yeah, absolutely. Two things, I think. Accessibility and jobs. This is 2020, and we have social media, we have email, and we have Zoom. Out talking to constituents in my district, I've heard the feedback that I'm the only candidate that they've seen out in that district talking to them. And they're really refreshed by the direct communication that I've offered to them. As your senator, I will always have my virtual door open to my constituents to talk to me about their ideas, express their concerns, and share the direction they think that the state should go. The more you and I engage, then the more I'll get done for you. It's really as simple as that. As your senator, I'll also work to bring businesses to Montana, modern green technology businesses. My background is cloud architecture. I've built the cloud. I speak the language. Bozeman has great broadband, and we should use that investment and bring both high-paying and entry-level tech jobs here to town. I can speak the language well, and I can communicate with the business owners and stakeholders to entice them to come here to help with getting people out of the poverty line that is a problem here in Montana.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. And Chris Pope with Senate District 31.
Thank you, Melissa. I have no doubt that the largest, most significant issue in front of us is our healthcare system. And I have sat in two sessions defending day in and day out with my colleagues attacks on Medicare and Medicaid. I voted for Medicaid expansion and Medicaid extension. And so we do have a system in place, but I believe we're going to see additional attacks on that program, as well on our county health boards and attacks on pre-existing to keep our society and our community safe and sound. So I want to focus yet on another issue real quick having to do with the mounting evidence that our climate is overheating due to human-caused activity. And I think this is going to be actually, without a COVID situation, would be one of our biggest issues in front of state government. This has immediate impact and substantial impact on our economy and our agricultural sector, on our recreation industries, and our environmental and personal public health. So my response is to help our state develop a thoughtful, smart, compassionate path forward and market-driven transitions to new energy and clean technologies. I sit on the energy committees in the state legislature, and the theme is to develop a modern grid to transition to clean-burning energy technologies, joining regional markets to continue our important role as an energy exporter in the state of Montana. So I think there are plenty of big issues in front of us, Melissa, but those are two. And between those two, I'll have my hands full. But I'm excited to serve my constituents in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Okay, so now it is time for the public to begin submitting your questions. We are going to have 45 minutes of question and answer. And as a reminder, some of these questions will come in live. We have a few that were submitted prior via email, so I will mix them up. I'll try to get to as many questions as I can. If any are duplicated, we may have to edit out a duplicate. And the first question that has come in is specifically for Jedediah Hinkle. And then remember, after Jedediah provides his answer, we do have an option for the other candidates to address the same question, and I will guide that for you. And we have 90 seconds for answers in this portion. So I'll read the question. Mr. Hinkle, when you were in the Senate, you voted to use taxpayer money to fund religious schools and private schools for the wealthy. Do you still think it's good policy to take taxpayer funds which could go into public schools and use it for religious and private schools? Also, as was shown in the Supreme Court, some of those religious schools teach disdain for LGBTQ people and people of other religions. Are you okay with funding that?
Yeah, I'm actually for choice in education, and I would prefer that if any money from a family goes into education, it should be pre-taxed. So, you know, there are educational savings accounts that people can set up, and I think we should be able to do that, not just for higher education, but also for K through 12. I honestly believe that the education of the child is the main point, and we need to keep the main point the main point. I know people who send their kids to private school, they have great educations. People who homeschool, they have great educations. And the vast majority of people I know, including myself, went to public school. I had a great public school experience myself. So I think it just should be left up to the parents. And in a lot of situations, it should be left up to the child, because children have different learning environments and different environments that they will excel in. And I think that if a parent and that child wants to take a different avenue, that they should be allowed to do that, especially during the times of coronavirus here, where there's a lot of uncertainty going on with education. And I would prefer that if any tax dollars go, it should be money that the family sets aside that should be pre-taxed.
Thank you for your answer. And now, if anyone else would like to provide an answer for this, would you please raise your hand and I'll mark you down? Great, so let's go with, so first let's go with Jolene.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to talk on this topic as a mother of five. We actually bought a house here in Gallatin County to try to keep our children in a school that actually teaches the scriptures. The Bible tells us that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. And those kind of words and that kind of teaching will never happen in our public schools. And so when you have a family that thinks the scriptures are important for daily living and thinks that children actually need to be raised hearing those scriptures, we need school choice. And we also need to support those families and say, your children are valuable to us, because what's going on right now is classic viewpoint discrimination. And that was actually proved at the Supreme Court by the Espinoza case. The Montana Family Foundation actually has a nice little description of that on their website. So we as a society need to say, you know what, we value all children. We value the homeschool children, we value the private school children and the public school children. And we need to have some kind of voucher system saying that. Right now, when you homeschool your children, you have to come up with the funds to do that. Same with private school. There are scholarship opportunities that our family took advantage of. And we're thankful for those, but it's still very expensive with the price of housing in Gallatin County.
Thank you, Jolene. And then the next hand that was raised is Colette.
So school choice is absolutely a possibility for anyone now. Nobody says a person cannot send their child to a private school. But taxpayer dollars support schools that teach all children, schools that don't pick and choose which children attend their schools. There are many private schools out there that pick and choose which children are going to attend. And that's not what a public school is about. Public school takes in the disabilities. We take in the low socioeconomic families. That's what public tax dollars are for, is to support everyone. And those experiences are very valuable to young children.
Thank you, Colette. So I have a few more hands, but I'm going to refresh the audience so we know what the question is again. So I'm shortening it just a little bit. Do you think it's good policy to take taxpayer funds, which could go into public schools, and use it to fund religious and private schools? That is the short version of this question. Could you hear any of that?
Just the last part.
I will do it again. So before we move on to the next few folks, I'm just going to give a refresher of the question. And in short, it is, do you think it's good policy to take taxpayer funds, which could go to public schools, and use it to fund religious and private schools? That's the short version. And by the order of hands that were raised, next we have Chris Pope.
Melissa, I think that I would echo Colette's answer. So in the interest of time, I will say that this election, for those watching, is a referendum on the quality of our public education in the state of Montana, and the attacks will come. It's not just the issue of public funding. It's issues across the board. And so if you care about public education, you need to pay attention to who you vote for. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And next was Kelly Cordham. You're muted, Kelly.
I oppose the use of public funds for private schools for the reason of it takes away from the pool that serves all the people, all the students, all the parents. There has to be a base level of guaranteed education for the citizens or the students of Montana and America. That's how strong countries are built. That's the foundation of freedom, is the freedom of information and education. So while I'm fine with private schools existing, I oppose the use of public funds on them. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys. You know, saying that children have to go to government-run schools is the antithesis of freedom, actually. Lower income and disadvantaged children are harmed the most when their parents can't choose to take the money that they paid for their student, their child, to go to a school that maybe is more compatible with their values. And so I support more freedom. I support parents making decisions that's best for their children. And I support breaking up the government monopoly on education. You know, we can't have the government telling parents what's best for their children. And if you care about minorities, if you care about disadvantaged children, then you would support school vouchers. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, we have another question that has come in. I'm going to read the question and then we will start with the Senate candidates on this one, but it is for everyone. So, address for everyone. Do you support the defunding of law enforcement? And if so, why? So let's start, please, with Chris Pope. Chris, you're still muted.
I apologize. I do not support defunding the police. I do support investment in our peace officers and to improve the relationship between our law enforcement folks who put their lives on the line every day for the rest of us, and then to work hard at changing relationships and to creating more equity and more fairness and more safety in our communities. I think that's essential. I also support Black Lives Matter because that is often tied to this, but I do not support the defunding of our important police enforcement folks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And so next, can we please hear from Nick Olivato?
Sure.
If you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely do not support the Marxist Black Lives Matter organization. I'd encourage anybody to look at the history and who runs that organization, what that organization is about, because it's very dangerous. I also wholeheartedly oppose the defund police movement, which is rooted here in Bozeman. I actually was the organizer of the defund police rally. You know, our police officers are our neighbors. They're our family members. They're our brothers and sisters. You know, they're the guy that you serve at the grocery store when you ring them up. They're the guy that lives down the street. They have a barbecue with you know, you talk to. You know, they're no different than any of us. And I think the defund police movement and anybody that supports it, or even that supports Black Lives Matter, is being very disrespectful to the state of Montana. We've all seen firsthand what's happened in Seattle, what's happened in Portland. These will all happen here in Montana if you support the Black Lives Matter or the defund police movement. We don't want to turn Montana into California.
Thank you, Nick. All right, so next, can we please hear from Jolene, House District 65?
Yeah, I absolutely support our law enforcement. For a few months, I was actually working in the ER registration, and these guys get so many curses just spoken over them. It's unreal, just the verbal abuse they take, never mind the physical threat to their lives that can happen on their shifts. They don't know what they're running into, but because they're willing to take that risk, most of us are sleeping well at night, because these guys are dealing with a lot of dark stuff that's really, you know, trying to find its way into our society and find a home and spread. And so I'm very thankful for our police officers. I do not agree with the Black Lives Matter movement. I think if we're serious about dealing with that, we need to stop teaching Darwinism in our schools, because Darwin was the one that started to suggest that people with darker color skin are medical apartheid. You will see how that played out on our African-American members of our society. And it's horrific. But that idea started, again, because Darwin did not want to listen to the scriptures. He wants some other, you know, explanation for our being. He decides, you know what, we came from apes. And that has done so much damage to the Black community. I was in Atlanta in the Human Rights Museum, and I suggested that to the folks working there. And I was actually talking to a Black lady. I said, you guys need to make a point about Darwin.
Thank you, Jolene. And then Kelly Cordham, if you would like to respond.
Thank you. The statistics show that people of color are disproportionately killed by police. There is clearly something that needs to be done there. However, absolute removal of police is not an option. Police serve their communities. I would like to point at the state of Montana is mostly responsible for the law enforcement level officers hire at a different level, and that's highway patrol type and state marshals. But as far as funding priorities, I believe there's a little bit of reform that could happen in terms of preventative measures as opposed to reactive measures when it comes to funding law enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And we will have an opportunity for the last two candidates to respond, but I would like to refresh the question once more. The question is, do you support the defunding of law enforcement? And if so, why? Can we please hear from Jedediah Hinkle if you would like to respond?
Yes. So the answer to the question is no, I don't support defunding law enforcement. But I want to tell you a story. I was out meeting the residents of my district and I met a young man. He was a college student. And we talked about some different issues. And based on kind of the issues that we talked about, he kind of seemed like he was maybe more of a left-leaning guy. But he finally, he just kind of paused for a second. He goes, can I ask you another question? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That's why I'm here. And he goes, like with this defunding the police, like do they want to fully defund or partially defund or why do they want to defund? And so I kind of explained a little bit what was going on and even some of our communities in Montana here in defunding the police. And then he chimes in, he goes, well, don't we want the police? Like, don't we want to be safe? And then he says, isn't it kind of common sense that we want our police, that we don't want our police defunded? And I said, you know what you're doing right now? I said, you're using your head. I said, you're thinking through this issue. You're looking for an honest answer. You have an honest question, but you're using your mind right now and you're thinking through it. And so we kind of talked about a little bit more about this issue and what's going on with it and kind of what's behind it, the different groups that are behind it. And you know what he said to me afterwards? He goes, yeah, you know, he goes, my girlfriend and I were kind of more independent, but I kind of think we're leaning right, you know, because of this. Thanks.
Jedediah. Okay. So we have another question that has come in. Oh, I'm sorry. Colette, hello. All right. So Colette, if you would like to respond, please do.
So I oppose defunding the police as well. The highway patrolmen, the women, men, they are my brothers and sisters in the AFL-CIO and in MFPE. I do not look to get rid of their jobs. I do recognize that the Black and Indigenous and people of color are under some serious, serious pressure, and they are not treated the same as we are. And I do support that there be, let me step back a second and say that we have had a lot of services cut that the police are making up for in mental health services and other areas, public services, that we need help in to prevent suicides and to prevent the police from having to come out and answer calls that other public services could be taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you everyone for answering that question. So the next question is addressed to everyone. It's sort of a two-part question. And I may need a show of hands to help me get through this. So the question is, if you, candidate, have been in the legislature before, why do you want to return? And if you have not yet served, what is your reason for running? So candidates, please keep in mind your position, whether you've served before or whether you're just coming in. And everyone is able to answer this. So if you would like to answer, you may. If you don't want to, when I call your name, you can say pass. And Colette, would you please start for us? Oh, you're muted.
I stepped up. I want to run. I want to be elected, run for the legislature, because I do not think the average Montanan is getting a fair shake. I do not think that we are putting our dollars where they need to go. And I really do think that there are places that we can get them from without increasing the working man's, working woman's taxes. That's why I'm here. I'm for the people.
Thank you. And Jedediah, would you like to speak to this question?
Sure. So I don't know, you know, a lot of you probably know, maybe some of you don't know, but Montana has what's called a citizen legislature. So we get elected, we go up to the Capitol, we technically have 90 days to do our work. You know, we're usually up there for about 4 months if you include weekends, but 90 legislative days to do our work. So, you know, when you're a freshman legislator, it's all about learning the process. There's a huge process to advancing a bill through the legislature. And an even bigger process, it's been termed as drinking out of a fire hose, is to learn the issues. I mean, you are overloaded. So your freshman year, you're really looking to learn the process. By the next session, you're already getting pulled into leadership. You got the process down. You're still learning some, but then you still start learning more on the issues and things like that. So, you know, we have term limits in the Montana legislature, and oftentimes people run for the House and then run for the Senate. But really, you have a short period of time to accomplish what you want to accomplish and become a successful legislator. And we only meet every other year. So why I want to head back to the legislature basically is I have unfinished business. One of those issues that I want to address is the property taxes and lessening that burden for Belgrade and for Montana. And second, we're going to be in a huge battle. You know, the Democrats say revenue shortfalls, and I say no taxes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jedediah. And now if we could hear from Nick Olivato, who's running for Senate District 31, if you'd like to address this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not a politician. I never intended on being throughout my private sector experience. I come from a technology background. I come from a business background. I have a degree in philosophy. So reading law and understanding legislation is come second nature to me. You know, when I was a kid, I used to get a Christmas gift. And the first thing I would do is open up and I'd read the manual. I'd spend more time with the manual than I would with the toy. And it was my parents would tease me about that and everything. So, you know, I think legislation needs to be created, as Jedediah was saying, by citizens. You know, I think we need more normal men and women in the legislature. Professional politicians are very last century to me. You know, we have people that have been in the legislature for multiple terms. You know, we have a governor that's trying to move over to the Senate. Those types of people, those are the political establishment. You know, if you want change in your government, then I humbly ask for your vote and support, because we're the new generation, Jedediah, myself, and my fellow conservatives. And, you know, we're the change that you're looking for.
Thank you, Nick. And Chris Pope, would you like to address this?
Yes, thank you, Melissa. There are no professional politicians in the state of Montana at the local level that we're talking about right here. I have served for 4 years. I am termed out after 8 years of service in either house. We simply are given a short leash and very little time, as Jedediah mentioned, to do stuff. So I don't think we have to worry about a political class here. What we have to worry about is unfinished business. And I have a bill for kids to extend their educational opportunities, kids with special needs. I have bills for energy efficient transportation, electric vehicles. I have bills to address our onerous property taxes here in Bozeman, Montana, that are forcing people out of their homes. And it really, really concerns me. And I have House Bill 740, didn't even get out of the Republican Taxation Committee on the House side. I'll be on the Senate side this time. And believe me, I will be bringing that bill again. We need to address and figure out how to get visitors to help us with our infrastructure and other public service costs. So clean energy is very important to me. So is affordable housing. There's an awful lot to do, and that's why I'm running. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. So I'll refresh the question before we continue. The question is, if you have been in the legislature, why do you want to return? And if you have not yet served, what is your reason for running? Kelly, would you like to address this?
Please, and thank you. I'm a first-time candidate. I guess the core of me deciding to run for office was kind of realizing how I got to where I am. It wasn't it wasn't just my own efforts. I was supported by amazing teachers, K through 12 in Ekalaka. The university system invited me as an in-state student in. I got a scholarship, a small scholarship in computer science, and it improved the trajectory of my life such that I want everyone to be able to have the same opportunities. With that in mind, another big reason I'm running is stability in all of our lives. Like if we are living paycheck to paycheck and worrying about where the next meal is coming from, or worrying about what the market's going to do tomorrow, that affects how we live our lives. And to be really free, we have to be able to look more than a month ahead. The last reason I'm running is representation. The legislature trends older and wealthier than the average Montanan. And I believe candidates like myself, Emily in 68 and Alice in 63, will help make the legislature more representative of its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And Jolene, would you like to address this question?
Yes, thank you. I have not been in the legislature before at all. I am running because I'm really concerned about liberty and freedom. I would actually like to revive the Nuremberg Code. So the Nuremberg Code was what happened after World War II when we held Germany accountable for crimes against humanity. And the Nuremberg Code says two things. It says anything that's done to you medically must be, one, voluntary, and two, you must have informed consent. So I would like to bring that language to life in our code in Montana to make sure that, you know, the powers that exist later in our history cannot force things like vaccines, cannot force even things like masks, that we understand that freedom is not up for grabs. And we had men and women die in World War II to gain that freedom, and we're starting to lose it. So that's the work that I would like to do in the legislature.
Thank you very much, Jolene. Thank you, candidates. So we do have another question, and it reads, and it is addressed to everyone. Again, you can choose to pass if you want once we get around to calling on you. The question reads, the cost of living for Bozeman has skyrocketed in just the last few years, with the median price to purchase a basic home without land at $600,000. These living costs impact the middle and working class across Montana and push many Montanans out of the state. What solutions do you have in mind to lower the cost of living and property taxes in our state in an effort to protect the middle and working class? And can we please start with Jedediah Hinkle running for House District 67?
Sure. So it's a tough issue. We can't in the state, I'm sure a lot of people would like us to prohibit other folks moving into our county and into our state and driving up home prices and things like that. But we just can't do those things. You know, the market drives the value for homes, really. But what we can do is, well, let me preface it with this. You know, Montana is, I believe, 44th in the nation for lowest median income. So we were closer. We were about 48, 49. We've come up a little bit. That's good. But for the cost of living around here, we don't make a lot. So my philosophy is to let you keep more of your hard-earned dollars in your own pocket to do with what you want with that money, rather than the government taking it and spending it on all kinds of programs and things. It is unbelievable the bills that we have come through the legislature that are constantly requesting tax dollars. And it, you know, if there's a cent to spend in the legislature, it's always spent. And then we'll run into budget shortfalls, and then they come back and they want to take more of your tax dollars to make up the difference. Well, we need to let families keep some of their own money in their own pockets. And one of the issues, again, I'm going to readdress it again, is the property tax issue. You know, this folks coming in here and the housing prices going up not only affects homeowners, but affects renters, because renters, many of them may not understand you are paying the property taxes of your landlord. Every time the landlord's property taxes go up, your rent's going to go up. So I want to address the property tax issue in Montana and see if we can lessen that burden for the residents of House District 67 and Montana in general.
Thank you, Jedediah. And Colette, also running for House District 67, would you like to respond?
So many of our families right here in the community, even if they didn't keep any of their tax dollars, in fact, many of them received tax refunds, still wouldn't be able to afford a home and still are having troubles staying in the Bozeman area. They're moving further out into Belgrade. They're moving further out into Manhattan, even if they're not paying much in taxes. The wages need to come up. The wages need to come up. And people say, you know, that's going to drive costs up. There are things that we can do to say that there are bills that we can pass to say that those costs should not be passed on. So the wages need to come up. People need to make more money.
Thank you. Okay, and then Jolene, running for House District 65, would you like to address this question?
Sure, yeah. I'm actually sponsored by Montanans for Affordable Housing. And again, in Gallatin County, this is a tough thing. We've got a university crowd, which makes, you know, our county attractive. We also have, my husband is pretty involved in a high-end guest ranch. And I would even hate to guess how many people have bought second and third homes here after vacationing with us. So I do actually take part of the blame on this. Even Tucker Carlson the other night was saying, yeah, and you're thinking about moving to Bozeman. I'm like, Tucker, thank you. We don't need more people out of state selling their million-dollar houses and driving up our price of housing. So I don't have a tremendous, awesome answer for this question. What I do think would be great is if we could absolutely abolish property taxes for folks that are over 65 years of age. I think that would be really important to do to make sure our older populations are not being taxed out of their homes. As far as driving down the cost of housing, how do you do that without becoming a socialist or Marxist country? I don't know. I don't think making businesses pay their employees more is the answer. I mean, yeah, we need to come up with more money, but how do you, you know, I just think it's a complicated problem and I don't have a super great answer for you.
Well, thank you for your response, Jolene. And Kelly, would you like to respond as well?
Yes, please. This is the number one issue we hear on doors and from our constituents and in just talking to people for the last 8 years is the housing costs of living in Bozeman or Belgrade and the surrounding communities as we get more popular. We cannot stop the inflow of people who believe this is an amazing place, because clearly it is, because we're here and we decided to live here. There are many complex tools we can use to address this issue. Let's start with a tax that captures tourist income that don't pay the sales tax like they do in other states. The sales tax they pay in other states helps support local infrastructure, roads, everything involved, airports. That money is coming out of our property tax right now. So if we could cleverly implement some taxes that capture taxes just from tourists and don't hit the locals, that's one step. We can increase the rate that we zone, get more construction, more housing inspectors, build faster. We can encourage local businesses to thrive and increase the wages so people can afford to live here. There's tons of tools and they are all very complicated, but I have faith. I bet we will be addressing this in the legislature this year and I'm excited to be involved in that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And before we move on to the candidates running for Senate, I'd like to refresh the question. It is, the cost of living for Bozeman has skyrocketed. These living costs impact the middle and working class and push many Montanans out of cities and even out of the state. What solutions do you have in mind to lower the cost of living and property taxes in an effort and working class? Chris Pope, do you have an answer for this?
Thank you, Melissa. Every year,
Bozeman throws a party for people from around the planet, and they come here by the millions. And they use our streets, and they use our police services, and they use our water systems. And we send them packing happily. We're happy to have them here, but we're paying the bill every time. And then we go out and do it again next year. It's time for that to end. It's an existential issue in our city. I can't get the conservative side to listen to urban issues. It's a big issue for us in Bozeman, but we will continue to bring bills to create enabling legislation that reflects kind of like the resort taxes that have been so positive and successful in places like West Yellowstone, Gardner, Ennis, to allow our local communities to tax ourselves and to allow, in a friendly gesture to tourists, please help us pay for this wonderful place you come to visit. I also want to approach state government with affordable housing issues. It's got to be market-driven. It's got to be a public-private partnership. We have a housing assessment that was done in October of 2019 by the city. It says that 6,400 workforce housing units need to be built immediately, and then we need to stay ahead of job of our. I think we can address it in the legislature this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And Nick, would you like to respond?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've heard some talk about the citizens getting a tax refund. A tax refund is a refund on tax money that you've already paid to the government, not that you're getting extra money back from the government. Reducing the overall tax burden, which is what Jedediah was saying, would benefit citizens the most. A tax refund is only partial that you get back, and you've already paid that tax. So that's the first thing. Second, I've heard some on the other side there, on the Democrat side, saying things like they do support a local levy sales tax, which I think was just alluded to a moment ago, but I don't think there was a big commitment to that idea because it's very unpopular with this. Yeah, there's a lot of people that come to visit our town, and it's beautiful. It's very beautiful. And they come throughout the seasons, but there's more money spent by local residents. And so by allowing the city to levy a tax, you're going to hurt the people that live here the most. So it's not really going to solve the problem. Your housing prices are a function of supply and demand. It's a fundamental principle. Now, I understand fundamental principles because I've worked in the private sector extensively, and I've worked with philosophy, and I've worked with other studies of that nature. And so allowing the city to zone more freely and maybe reduce the restrictions on what they're allowed to zone in. Open spaces are great, but you have a park and there's a lot of housing units that can't be built there. So I think there needs to be a balance. That'll help address the cost of living, as well as bringing in new jobs and businesses, as I said before.
Thank you for that, Nick. All right, candidates, we have another question that has come in. So this one is specifically addressed to Jolene Crum. However, all the candidates have the option to respond as well after she does. So I will read the question. It says, Ms. Crum, if a COVID vaccine, which protects against the spread of the virus, like vaccines have done for smallpox, measles, and other deadly diseases, will you take the vaccine and or will you encourage your constituents to take it?
I appreciate the question. The answer is absolutely not. I would love to take this moment to take time to say there's a series of DVDs that I donated to the library. Unfortunately, Bozeman Library and Belgrade Library would not accept it in their collection, but the Three Forks Library did accept The Truth About Vaccines. It's a 7-DVD series. You need to rent that, and you need to understand the foundation of corruption our vaccine industry is founded on. I wore a white lab coat. I worked in the lab. I had a baby, and I thought that we had good safety data and good controls for our vaccines. You can't build businesses without that. Turns out our vaccine industry has neither, okay? In 1986, we actually, in Congress, passed an act that gives the pharmaceutical industry zero liability for any personal injury that goes on with these vaccines. In the ferret studies, when they attempted a coronavirus vaccine, when you actually, then they challenged the ferrets with the live virus, The outcome of those ferrets was not good. The question is, are we making binding antibody? Are we making neutralizing antibody? Folks are saying we need to be making neutralizing antibody. And I actually just read a paper that shows folks that have the neutralizing antibody and still have symptoms. So don't bet the ranch on the vaccine. Take your vitamin C, take your vitamin D, stay away from Bill Gates and Fauci. Thank you.
Thank you, Jolene. And Kelly, also running for House District 65, would you like to answer this question?
Yes, thank you. Vaccines have been proven over time to eradicate diseases like polio and smallpox. There is scientifically sound evidence vaccines work. Right now, the talk about vaccines is a bit muddled because we are talking about rushing vaccines that might not be proven scientifically or in practice. I just support the good science that built these vaccines that have spared millions and billions of lives across the world in the last 50 or 60 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And moving on to the next House districts, Colette with House District 67, would you like to provide an answer to this question?
I think it's too soon. I think it takes a long time. I think it takes studies. I think we are way too soon on this pandemic starting to be requiring people to have vaccinations right away. I wouldn't support it, no.
Thank you. And Jedediah Hinkle, running for House District 67, would you like to provide an answer to this question?
I'd just like to say that I believe in freedom. And, you know, if it's something that's mandated by vaccines, I don't think we should absolutely should not do that. It should always be a person's personal choice. And they should look into, you know, the data that Jolene had presented there and just make sure you know both sides of it. You know, there's different data on different vaccines. And I just think that we should always put freedom first, let individuals make their own family choices, whether they want to take vaccines or not.
Thank you, Jedediah. And before we move on for the opportunity for the Senate candidates to answer this, I'll refresh the question. If a COVID vaccine which protects against the spread of the virus is developed, will you take it and or will you encourage your constituents to take it? Nick Olivato, would you like to provide an answer?
Absolutely. No. The survival rate is over 99%. The coronavirus, China virus pandemic has been largely overblown by the media, as has the response to the development of the vaccine. You know, I heard a few comments here saying that it's been rushed. Well, it's been a year. You know, I've personally known about the coronavirus coming over from China in November. You know, unlike maybe some of the people on the other side, I wasn't caught up with some of the political theater that was going on that turned out to be a giant hoax. And now we wind up with another media spectacle here. So, you know, I hear a lot, trust the scientists. Well, there's one on this call, and it's Jolene. And she's actually provided some interesting evidence that I think the other side, if they say they're open-minded, they should consider before jumping to such a brash conclusion.
Thank you for your response, Nick. And Chris Pope, would you like to respond to this question?
Thank you, Melissa. I think there's a spectrum of opinion on this particular question. I think there's something like 50 vaccines in trial or in progress right about now. And who knows when and if we find a vaccine. There's no vaccine for HIV. So that was, you know, 20 years ago. So I would say 100% I would take a vaccine if it was deemed by the CDC and science to be effective. And I would encourage my constituents to do the same. This is a killer. This is not a media hoax. This has nothing to do with the media. This has to do with public health. And I would 100% encourage the state of Montana to be patient, to find the right solution to this and to follow the science and then everybody in, because otherwise our economy will never come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. The next question that has come in is for all the candidates. It reads, what will you do to provide health care to Montanans that cannot afford private insurance? And I'd like to start this with the Senate candidates. Chris, would you like to respond to this?
I believe that health care should be available in an affordable sense of it to every Montana citizen, regardless of their economic background or any other of their demographics. And I believe that we can do that. I think our systems are viable enough and robust enough for us to extend healthcare to every Montana. And I understand that that's not a popular sort of position to take for some Montanans, but I think until we get to that point, we can't start controlling the incredibly onerous prescription drug costs and other costs in the system. I've sat through many, many business and labor committee meetings reviewing all these various issues around health costs and how to contain costs and getting to an umbrella program where all Montanans have access to affordable health care is really a central important thing for us to move to. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And Nick, would you like to provide an answer?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that affordable health care for all citizens of all economic classes and all races can be achieved at a more local as opposed to a state level. You know, we have a large state government, has a lot of land to manage, has a lot of area to manage, and a lot of people to consider. You know, we don't have a large population, but we're still a large state. And so the bloat that goes with government takes away the services from the people that need them the most. I would definitely support increasing access to health care for Indigenous people, for people of color, and for people with low incomes, granted that only the middle class of the state are not responsible for paying for it. I think that local businesses can grow themselves in the state of Montana. We have great products. You know, we have a great tourism industry. And we can find ways to pull money out of those industries, not a lot, and not impact the taxpayer directly. So reducing government bloat through technology, I think, is an absolute must. And we can then take that money and use it to increase the services or help subsidize low-income taxpayers and troubled people's cost.
Thank you, Nick. And again, the question is, what will you do to provide health care to Montanans who cannot afford private insurance? Colette, candidate for House District 67, would you like to respond?
Well, as a legislature, I will absolutely support making sure that health care is available to all of our Montana citizens. I have a sister who has brain tumors, inoperable brain tumors, and she has to go to Mexico for her treatments. She can't get the care she needs here in Montana. And she doesn't have the insurance to take care of it. And right now, she can't get into Mexico to get those treatments. It's really important that we make sure pre-existing conditions are taken care of, that's not off the board. And I will support making sure that Montanans get their health care. Thank you. Somebody can have my 30 seconds.
Thank you, Cola. And Jedediah, would you like to provide an answer for this question?
Sure. So 2017, you know, the Republican legislature and Republicans in the legislature passed a couple of bills, possibly even more than that, to try to actually drive down healthcare costs. So we kind of got two sides here. We got, well, we can just throw a bunch more taxpayer dollars at it which never solves the problem, and in some instances creates more of a problem, or we can try to do things to drive down healthcare costs in the first place. And it's hard to do on a state level because we are under that big federal umbrella of Obamacare. So the state only has a little bit of wiggle room, but we're talking about our state legislature right here. And that's what I'm in support of. I'm in support of creative ideas and even maybe just standard ideas that have proven the test of time that they work to drive down healthcare costs for all Montanans. Some of those bills actually work to drive down insurance costs along with healthcare costs. Unfortunately, they made it all the way through the legislature and they were vetoed on Governor Bullock's desk. So we're back to square one. And I do want to add, my wife and I, we don't have private health insurance. There are a number of medical sharing programs around, and they're incredibly affordable. For a single person or one individual, you're looking at probably somewhere around $70, $80 a month. A whole family, we're looking at $300 a month. So there are other options in the state that people really do need to look into. Thank you.
Thank you, Jedediah. And Jolene, running for House District 65, would you like to answer this question?
Yes, I am game to answer. Thank you. So when we talk about costs of health problems going on with our families, we need to talk about prevention. And what I'd like to point out is Children's Health Defense has actually noted that 54% of Americans' children have serious chronic health conditions. And that actually corresponds to the increase in vaccination through the Childhood Immunization Program pushed by the CDC. I, on my website, actually have several really good links that I want all parents to get in and look at. One of the papers that I have there are 10 facts every parent needs to know about vaccination. And one of those facts is a whistleblower at the CDC saying they've committed scientific fraud against our children regarding the MMR vaccine and autism. And I'm giving away those videos. The video is called Vaxxed. It's done very well, but it's just documenting the fraud that's going on in our CDC. So when you get a vaccine, you will never see the product insert sheet. That product insert sheet says, we have not tested this for carcinogenicity. We have not tested this for mutagenicity. How many of our children that are at some place like St. Jude's are unvaccinated, right? Good question, isn't it? Since we're injecting all this stuff into our children and we're saying, we don't really know, because these things are not studied long-term for illnesses and potential illnesses, and the controls are terrible.
Thank you, Jolene. And Kelly, also running for House District 65, would you like to answer this question?
Please. At the state level, as far as guaranteeing better health outcomes for Montanans, I would defend Medicaid expansion, which in the years since it's passed have saved our rural hospitals in small towns like Ekalaka. They've prevented almost 100,000 Montanans from going bankrupt if they get seriously ill or injured. And that's worth defending, in my opinion. At the national level or beyond that, we have lots of data that other countries have successfully implemented a public option, which has increased life expectancies significantly and reduced the per capita spending on healthcare. So if we, the richest country, perhaps in the history of the world, can't pull this off and all those other countries can, what are we doing wrong and how can we reform? Thank you.
Thank you for your response, Kelly. Okay, candidates, we have a few more minutes for a few more questions. So the next question that has come in is specifically for Jedediah Hinkle, but remember, everyone has a chance to respond if you would like. The question reads, Mr. Hinkle. It moved. Okay. Mr. Hinkle, can you please explain your vote in 2017 on SJ-17, against a resolution which opposed efforts to transfer Montana's public lands to state ownership or sell them into private hands? If public lands were transferred to the state, how would the state bear the costs of maintaining those lands?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. That bill was a Democrat I gotcha bill, and it was full of errors and non-factual information. So in 2015, there's actually a bill brought to the legislature that came to the judiciary that would have prohibited government from selling off public lands in Montana. Okay, that one was specifically for the federal government. And then there was another bill brought to another committee that was for if lands had been transferred to the state to prohibit the sale of those lands. Those individuals and the Democrat side held these huge public land rallies where they were like, they're going to take away and sell off your public lands. Those same individuals came and opposed both of those bills to protect your public lands. One of those bills came to my committee, and during that committee hearing, I called up those individuals one by one and asked them questions. And honestly, I had one guy just tripping over himself because he didn't know how to answer it because it was totally hypocritical. And one of the questions that he addressed for me turned out to be in that SJ 17. When he gave me one answer in 2015, he then switched his position in SJ 17, and in that committee, I questioned him, and I got him to admit on the record that that bill needed to be amended. And you know what? It never got amended. And so it was tabled in committee, and then the Democrats brought it up, what's called a blast motion, and we're opposing lots of blast motions, okay, because they're bills that are pulled out of committee. Well, I opposed the blast motion. I didn't uphold the bill on the oppose the bill on the official record. So thank you for the question.
Thank you for answering. So in a moment here, I'll open up the floor to opportunity for the other candidates to provide a perspective on either supporting or opposing transfer of Montana's public lands to state ownership. But I'd like to see a show of hands on this issue just so I can be organized about it. I'd like to address this. Okay, thank you very much. Let's start with Kelly Cordham. He had his hand up first.
Thank you. On the issue of public lands, they're not making any more. The amount of land the United States in the United States is not going up and will probably go down over time. Privatizing public lands will exacerbate income inequality and lead to corporate control of new regions, which will amount to private profit at the public's cost. I do support the idea of fair bid, private-public partnerships, grazing on BLM land and that sort of thing. But as far as any bill that would reduce the amount of public lands, I would likely oppose them. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And Colette?
So no candidate running for office in this state is going to come out against public lands. Voters are going to have to do their homework and decide for themselves, does this candidate walk their talk?
Thank you, Colette. Okay, so we have a couple more questions that have come in. Some of them are duplicates, so pardon me for scrolling for just a moment here. Okay, so this question is for all the candidates, and it reads, your stance on environmental policies, climate change, and public lands, and should nonprofits like the Property and Economic Research Center, PERC, be a part of the solution? Can we please start with the Senate candidates? Chris Pope, would you like to provide an answer to this question?
Sure, Melissa, thank you. I am a very avowed and hardworking person to protect and steward our environment, to create a transition to clean energy technology, to protect our land and water, and certainly our lands, public landscapes and public waterways. As it goes to energy, I firmly believe in a market-driven set of solutions. I think we need to engage our private sector, and there's a role for state government and private, public-private partnerships. And there's a huge opportunity for billions of dollars of investment going forward in that regard. I have to admit, I couldn't speak to PERC because I'm not familiar enough with their mission statement, but I think there's all kinds of opportunity for nonprofits to be very involved in helping our constituents understand the issues and bring forth solid ideas for how to go forward. And I think it should be a compassionate plan going forward. There are communities that are going to be hard hit in a transition that's market driven. And I believe that we should be paying attention to those communities and helping them through this transition properly the way we would expect other Montanans to be supporting our communities as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And Nick, would you like to answer this question?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the energy lobby that my opponent supports and the environmental lobby, which so many would say I should support, are really two sides of the same coin. As citizens and voters, we need to be educated that there is an environmental lobby as much as there is an energy lobby. And so, you know, I heard a lot of the other side here talking about that they're very concerned with the rising cost of living. Well, one of the main drivers of the cost of living is the cost of energy. And so without unlocking Montana's natural resources for energy production or industry, you're not going to be able to decrease the cost of living for Montanans. And furthermore, I'm the biggest protector of public lands. I've probably spent more time in the forests and camping and rock climbing than anyone here on this call. And I want to keep those lands public. I want to keep them accessible. And I want to keep them clean, even cleaner than they are now. But we have to be balanced about what we're doing to lock up the access and preventing businesses or the government from using those resources that would benefit Montanans for generations to come.
Thank you, Nick. And again, the question is, what is your stance on environmental policies, climate change, and public lands? And should nonprofits like PERC be a part of the solution? And before we move to the House District candidates, I'd like to see from you folks a show of hands if you would like to respond to this question. Please raise your hand. Okay, thank you very much. Great, so let's start with Jedediah Hinkle, please, House District 67.
Oh, you forgot to mute me, so I'm unmuted. All right, so many of you may know, may not know, my background is actually in fish conservation. So I've worked, when I say work for fisheries biology, for roughly 20 years. A lot of it has been with native cutthroat trout in the conservation side of things. I would be out there trying to find habitats suitable to reintroduce these populations of fish. And with that, we would have to do different tests and monitoring of the water and the temperatures and different environmental factors that the water bodies would have to pass before we could introduce fish in there. In the legislature, in 2015, I supported a bill that was probably the most comprehensive, strictest mining laws in the nation passed. And I supported that bill because I believe in clean water and clean air and high standards to make sure that we're not polluting our fisheries or other bodies of water. And also, I have actually carried a bill for one of the most far left groups in the entire state, which goes to show that I really do look for common ground. But that was a bill in renewable energy. And it would allow a person in the net metering, they you could set up a wind system, you could set up a solar panel or some other kind of renewable generation on your property. Northwestern Energy will only zero out. If you're putting energy into the grid, they will only zero out your meter, but this bill would allow them to put an additional meter on their property. So if we had a rancher irrigation person that wanted to run a sprinkler system, they could do. So I've supported and carried renewable energy legislation.
Thank you, Jedediah. And then moving down the screen, Jolene running for House.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, I am working on a biopesticide to control grasshoppers on organic farms. So I think that says something. However, I think a radical environmental movement is not where we need to be headed. You know, if we look at the scriptures tell us something about the earth. The scriptures tell us that at one time there was a global flood. We see evidence of that. In fact, there was a big dinosaur, a sea-dwelling dinosaur found over in Ekalaka this summer. Ekalaka looks like it was underwater at one time.
And, you know, the Lord gave us a rainbow to remind us that he's not going to flood the earth again. So if we look farther in the scriptures, he does give us a warning that he is going to burn the earth. And what happens when you want to burn something? You warm it up. I don't think we can stop climate change. I think we have to be reasonable stewards for what we've been entrusted with while we're here for future generations. But I don't think excessive, you know, things against corporations is really beneficial to us in the whole picture of where the earth is headed.
Thank you, Jolene. And finally, Kelly Cordham, running also for House District 65.
Thank you. I am quite passionate about the clean energy economy, and particularly here in Montana, keeping up or paying attention to the laws of our neighboring states who have already kind of embraced our clean energy future. There are a lot of jobs in clean energy, and if we don't act as a legislature to make those accessible and encourage them, Montana power for Montana will become obsolete. Nobody will buy our fossil fuel power if all the neighboring states are outputting wind and solar at the rate that they are currently leveraging that up. Montana has a constitutional right to clean water and land and a healthful environment. I appreciate that, and I believe paired with the clean energy economy, that will work hand in hand. Finally, our tourism economy is very dependent upon a lot of our systems, our ski hills, our fly fishing, our beautiful lush mountains, and making sure we're leading on making sure Bridgerville stays cold. It's just a thing. We lead by example, and that is they're clearly intertwined and connected. And if Montana can lead, the rest of the nation will look on us and follow. Thank you.
And Colette, looks like you want to provide an answer. Thank you.
So, yeah, there are way too many working people out there depending on jobs that depend on oil and gas and mining. There has to be some transition work done. And all of those, the solar, the wind power, the materials to build those things have to come from somewhere. They have to come from the earth. So I do absolutely believe we need to take care of our planet. But in doing so, we have to make sure that we take care of the people who are doing the jobs, exporting, bringing those materials out of the ground. They need to have good paying jobs. As far as climate change is concerned, we need to listen to our kids. Our kids are really worried that they're not going to have a future. Our kids are not having kids. Our kids are choosing not to care. They don't think they have much time left. So we really need to take their considerations, their worries to heart and pay attention to how much plastic we're putting into our waters. I do have a lot of concern, but we need to make sure that in the transfer, the working people have good paying jobs. They're not put out.
Thank you, Colette. Thank you to all the public for providing your questions. We are actually out of time for the public questions. We have a few minutes now to wrap up. There were 10 questions left still that were not answered. So everyone who is watching, I encourage you to go ahead and visit the websites for these candidates, learn more about them. And if there are contact forms on those sites, use them and ask your questions. Thank you, candidates, for providing all of your answers. So we are going to move into the 2-minute closing statements. And reminder, those are 2 minutes closing statements, and then after that, we are all finished. So if we could please start with the Senate candidates. Nick Alavado, would you please provide your closing statement?
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, the League, Library, and the BPW for putting on this forum tonight. I'm going to keep it short because we're all busy people. There's a vice presidential debate, so I'm excited to go watch that. I love this state. It's a treasure. It truly is. I've been to a place that used to be like this. It's called California. And it rivals Montana in beauty, but it's not as beautiful as Montana. It pains me to see Democrats pushing policies that made California the problem that it is now. So as your next senator, you'll have someone who represents you and Helena, not the special interest groups. You know, I mentioned the environmental lobby and the energy lobby. Like I said, that's a fight, two sides of the same coin. I'm not a politician. I don't work in the energy industry. I don't have a history in the energy industry. And then also to say I'm a climber, a rock climber. I'm an outdoorsman. I've lived and breathed the fresh air of this earth all my life, and I want to look forward to doing it for generations. So I'll protect the environment, protect the public lands, and also make sure to raise the quality of life for all Montanans.
Thank you, Nick. And a closing statement from Chris Pope.
Thank you, Melissa, and thank you to the League and others for hosting tonight. In closing, my name is Chris Pope, and I'm asking for your support in my race for Montana Senate District 31. Good government matters. We've heard it tonight, and it works when we all work together. Coalition and compromise are essential ingredients to success. I'm committed to being an advocate for our city's top legislative priorities: property tax relief, affordable housing, and a clean energy policy among them. By the way, clean energy is now the low-cost option that will save our constituents money going into the future. And I will work for clean energy, and I'll also work to protect our public lands and waters. I'll work for students with special needs. I'll work to address mental health services that were currently in crisis due to massive tax cuts by the majority party in 2017. I think we've all read about that. I will work to ensure that Montana makes good on its promise for equal pay for equal work, to promote pre-K public education. I'll advocate for affordable housing and improved child care service, and I'll work to provide local governments with the power to ask our out-of-state visitors to reduce onerous property taxes. If elected, I'll serve all constituents in my district to the very best of my abilities. Thank you, League and BPW and the library, and Emily Broston, if you're listening, you are to be commended for your candidacy and your commitment to serve, and you will be a terrific legislator for Bozeman. I hope that rule has changed, Melissa, with all due respect. My name is Chris Pope. I'm running for Senate District 31, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. And can we please have a closing statement from Kelly Cordham, running for House District 65?
Thank you, Melissa, and thank you for all the hosts of this public service. Getting information out to voters is vital to our democracy and to make good decisions, and I appreciate this opportunity to do so. I am excited to serve my community. As Chris mentioned, if I am elected, I will also serve all of my constituents. I am a notorious listener. I have a solutions forward thought process. I'm a note taker. I'm proud to be a Montanan. I'm proud to be part of my community. This community has given me a lot, and I hope to serve its interests at the state level to continue to improve it and improve the job and healthcare outcomes for all of us. If our government is to be by, of, and for the people, it needs to represent the people, not out-of-state special interests. I'm Kelly Cordham for House District 65. I am proud to run a slate of good candidates and young people, including Emily Broston, House District 68, and Alice Buckley, House District 63. I'd appreciate your vote, and thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. And a closing statement from Jolene Crum, running for House District 65.
Hi, yeah, I'm Jolene, and I just appreciate your consideration for your vote. I'm the pro-medical freedom, pro-life, pro-religious freedom, pro-Second Amendment candidate on the ballot, and I enjoy getting to meet some of these folks door knocking. I'm referencing several things on my website from Robert Kennedy Jr., which I think is great, just work that he's doing, but also, you know, for some of the Democrats in that district, I think that's an important reference for them to understand that, you know, I'm looking at references and sources that are also, you know, known Democrats, because the information is important. And I think that speaks to an open-mindedness and an ability to just communicate for really the best outcome possible for the future for our children. And I appreciate your consideration. Please go to my website, jolenecrum.com. If any of the viewers would like a copy of Vaxxed, I am giving that away, because that is a documentary that we need to see and we need to know about, and it is being censored all over the place. Thank you.
Thank you, Jolene. Can we please hear a closing statement from Colette Campbell, running for House District 67?
So during the next legislative session, I should be the voice that brings the everyday hardworking Montanans to the table with me. We need to bring stability to Montana families in uncertain times. Over the years, the legislature has been busy slowly, quietly defunding our public services and asking them to always do more with less. It's okay to ask our 1% to reinvest in Montana and to help make us complete again. It is we, the people, who must take back our legislature and govern it competently for the benefit of all Montanans equally, regardless of race, religion, sex, color, or bank account. We have a lot of work to do in how we respond to the needs of the average Montanan. We have a lot of catching up to do in internet access and capabilities. We've got to get our rural schools, public services, clinics, and hospitals staffed and keep them that way. It's time to roll up our sleeves and get the work done. My name is Colette Campbell, and I'm asking for your vote for House District 67.
Thank you, Colette. And can we please hear a closing statement from Jedediah Hinkle, running for House District 67?
Yeah, thank you. Voters of House District 67, there's one thing that I cannot stand, and that's a lying tongue. And I'll tell you what, right now we've had two opportunities for Democrats to support bills that would stop or prohibit future sale of public land, and they oppose both of them. But yet they go around and they keep pointing fingers saying they're trying to take your public lands away, and that's not true. So I have one of the best records in the legislature for public lands. Not only have I supported access to public land legislation, I carried it myself, and also bills to increase recreational opportunities on public lands. If you want more information on this, go to jedediahhinkle.com, go to my legislative accomplishments, and bear in mind, I worked on our public lands for 20 years. Every day I threw on a pack and I was out there in the public lands. So fight against the hypocrisy, do your own research, know that there's information that's being hidden out there. Additionally, if you want your household protected from tax increases in 2017, to answer a $150 million shortfall, over $260 million worth of tax increases were proposed. I opposed those because I don't believe it's a responsibility of government to raise your taxes to pay for everything that they spend money on. And additionally, I fought for and worked on supported bills that would drive down healthcare costs without throwing government money at it. And I've carried bills for Democrats in my district. I've carried bills for Republicans in my district. I'm a type of legislator that looks for common ground. But I do stand on my principles, fiscal responsibility, tax increases. I will support fiscal responsibility, oppose tax increases. I have the experience needed to go back to the legislature. I know what I'm talking about. I can defend my record. And I'll tell you what, I will fight for you in House District 67.
Thank you, Jedediah. Thank you again to all of our candidates for joining us and providing your important perspectives to the public. Thank you. This is a huge, huge, important thing that you are doing. Thanks to all of the public guests who listened in tonight and who submitted questions. A special thank you again to our forum sponsors, who are the League of Women Voters of the Bozeman area, American Association of University Women Bozeman, the Belgrade Community Library, the Bozeman Public Library, and Bozeman Business and Professional Women. A reminder that this series does have a couple more evenings, again on October 12th and on October 13th, where we'll hear from the remaining candidates running for the PSC and the Gallatin County Commission, and then perspectives on the ballot issues. You can sign in as public guests to view those forums using the same link that you used tonight to get on. Please go ahead and check out the full forum schedule if you need to on the BPW Facebook page. And this virtual webinar has been recorded, so if you'd like to share it with friends who weren't able to watch it, then you can find a link posted on the BPW Facebook page. You can also find it on the YouTube channel for the Belgrade Community Library. And once more, here's a reminder that the absentee ballots will be mailed out on October 9th. And if you aren't registered to vote, you can do so by visiting the Secretary of State website at sosmt.gov/elections. Voter registration closes on October 26th. Ballots can be completed and returned in via snail mail, in person at a polling location, or in person to the county courthouse on election day, which is November 3rd. And on that day, November 3rd, same day voter registration and in-person voting will be available to you from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. You have all day. Thank you all for being active participants in our democracy. I'll now adjourn the forum and shut down the webinar. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you, Sarah. See you.